Good morning, everybody. It's Sunday morning, and we are here. Lizzie and I, Justin, are here for week. Oh, I just looked this up, and I think it's week 73 of our Turning Towards Life project. 73. So, welcome, everybody who's joining us. We know that people join us from all over the world for this, both live and catching up in the recordings afterwards. And this is a project which has come out of our partnership together with in an organization called Third Space. And as many of you will know, it's a half hour deep dive, is one of the ways that we've called it, into big questions of human living, and particularly what it is not to turn away. So each week we take a source, we read the source, and then talk about it. And we are so very glad that you're with us.
Hello, everybody. We're so happy to have you here, and thank you for always supporting us. I feel so glad that there is this little horde of people, as Justin says, all the way around the world, and that we get to do all these sources. One thing, Justin, I'm finding amazing at the moment is that we haven't yet run out of sources, which is quite...
Yes.
Hilarious. Like there are so many things in the world that we can draw on. And I don't know, somehow I think, oh, that there must be a limit to that. But when you do something like this, where every week there's a different choice, you think, my goodness, how much wonderfulness there is in the world. And we've barely even scratched the surface. It's amazing.
I was having exactly the same thought. I've been thinking for a while. Where will I find the next one? Where will I find the next one? And like you say, there's no shortage of them. So, of course, you'll know this, Lizzie, but we alternate finding sources every week, and this is your week, Lizzie. So I'm so very excited to read this and find out what we have to say about it.
Mm. Are you happy if I read first and then you read second?
Yes, of course. Before you do, I'll just say for anyone who's joining us for the first time, that the main home for this project is currently in a members-only Facebook group called Turning Towards Life, which you can join by request, and we will gladly say yes, and you'll find all the sources there. But we also have a sparkling website which holds all of the sources and all of the prior recordings. So if you are watching this and you haven't found your way to that yet, it's always at turningtowards.life, and you can always find what we're reading and some things we've said about it and every one of the previous now 72 sources, and many more to come, we hope.
Cool. Thank you, Justin. So this poem is called The Seven of Pentacles by Marge Piercy. So here we go. See what you can do to settle into your seat and receive this vast beauty that Marge has written for us. Under a sky the colour of pea soup, she is looking at her work, growing away there actively, like grapevines or pole beams, as things grow in the real world slowly enough. If you tend them properly, if you mulch, if you water, if you provide birds that eat insects a home and winter food, if the sun shines and you pick off caterpillars, if the praying mantis comes and the ladybugs and the bees, then the plants flourish, but at their own internal clock. Connections are made slowly. Sometimes they grow underground. You cannot tell always by looking what is happening. More than half the tree is spread out in the soil under your feet. Penetrate quietly as the earthworm that blows no trumpet. Fight persistently as the creeper that brings down the tree. Spread like the squash plant that overruns the garden. Gnaw in the dark and use the sun to make sugar. Weave real connections, create real nodes, build real houses. Live a life you can endure. Make love that is loving. Keep tangling and interweaving and taking more in. A thicket and bramble wilderness to the outside, but to us, interconnected with rabbit runs and burrows and lairs. Live as if you liked yourself, and it may happen. Reach out, keep reaching out, keep bringing in. This is how we're going to live for a long time. Not always, for every gardener knows that after the digging, after the planting, after the long season of tending and growth, the harvest comes.
It's really very wonderful hearing you read that, Lizzie. Mm. So I'm going to read it as well. So this is the Seven of Pentacles, and it's by Marge Piercy. Under a sky, the colour of pea soup, she is looking at her work, growing away there, actively, thickly, like grapevines or pole beans, as things grow in the real world, slowly enough. If you tend them properly, if you mulch, if you water, if you provide birds that eat insects a home and winter food, if the sun shines and you pick off caterpillars, if the praying mantis comes and the ladybugs and the bees, then the plants flourish, but at their own internal clock. Connections are made slowly. Sometimes they grow underground. You cannot always tell by looking what is happening. More than half the tree is spread out in the soil under your feet. Penetrate quietly as the earthworm that blows no trumpet. Fight persistently as the creeper that brings down the tree. Spread like the squash plant that overruns the garden, gnaw in the dark, and use the sun to make sugar. Weave real connections, create real nodes, build real houses. Live a life you can endure. Make love that is loving. Keep tangling and interweaving and taking more in. A thicket and a bramble wilderness to the outside, but to us, interconnected with rabbit runs and burrows and layers. Live as if you liked yourself, and it may happen. Reach out, keep reaching out, keep bringing in. This is how we are going to live for a long time. Not always, for every gardener knows that after the digging, after the planting, after the long season of tending and growth, the harvest comes.
Oh, it's like having a massage or something. So beautiful how it creates all this kind of imaginary world in my mind as we read it. And I think at this point, Justin, it's always like, well, I wonder what the starting point is going to be. Because there's so many beautiful things. I think the bit for me that really it keeps hitting me is this part where Marge says connections are made slowly. Sometimes they grow underground. You cannot always tell by looking what is happening. Like, particularly at the moment, I just feel like that is really, really, really true and evident when you look back on anything. It's possible to see how much you didn't see that was being made at the time, which you can now see. Like as it, like when a plant kind of comes from a bulb and you plant the bulb and you wonder, I remember doing this with peonies once, gorgeous peonies, and feeling how many connections must have had to have been made when I saw the first flower that came. And it seems to me like life has this going on in so many, so many ways. And our view is so tiny of what our eyes get to report back to us is what's going on. And there's this whole world of other stuff happening that we can't tell.
I think this is such an extraordinarily hopeful poem. It's one of the things that I really love about it in exactly the way that you're saying, which is maybe one of the biggest destroyers of hope is our demand that we ought to be able to see an easy connection between what we do and what happens. Mm. So we go, I'm in difficulty, or we're in difficulty, or we are in difficulty, as we so clearly are in so many ways in the world right now. I think at all these different levels, the demand that we ought to be able to trace a straightforward line between I did this and that happened, and very often, which means I did this and I got, and the world went the way I wanted it, quite quickly robs us of any feeling of hope, because most of the world isn't amenable to that. And gardening is such a beautiful but also really appropriate metaphor for this. And when you said, Lizzie, about planting peonies and realizing, being able to see how much was happening, how much had had to happen for anything to be able to appear, and that nothing really appears. It appears on its own schedule, but still everything has to happen. So that's something I so appreciate about Marge Pierce's words here, that she says, what we have to do is keep on tending, picking off the caterpillars and watering, and knowing that we're not in charge of really of what happens, but also that we are participants in what happens. And our hope gets robbed from us when we either demand that we are godlike and can just have the world a particular way, but it also gets robbed from us when we give up and no longer play our part and no longer keep doing the diligent everyday work and practice that it takes. And I was reading this poem actually not so long ago with a group of people who are all involved in thinking about and studying how to work with people in organizations. And one of the reasons I read it was exactly that, was that in the human world, let alone in the world of growing plants, it's not so different. We keep on weaving and acting and taking responsibility and doing our best and not knowing what's happening, and stuff happens from it. It's really, really important to trust that. And maybe particularly, I right now very, as many people, I think, really thinking about what's happening with many things, politics, climate, bigger things in our world. And it's so easy to say, well, I can't do anything. But even there, what does she say? Reaching out, bringing in again and again and again. This is how things always have the possibility of changing.
Mm. Yeah. I think also just listening to you, Justin, talk about, you know, the demand that we have of, I do something and I need to know what happens. I feel like there's also like a belief in that that's what's going on, that has it be that way. Like if I believe that that's all that's happening is I act and something happens, it's a really kind of diminished source of power. Like, of course we can do so much, but there's also a hell of a lot going on, way more than just what we're doing. You know, I've been looking, you know, everyone's feed is everybody's feed. So I think I have lots of alternative feeds going on. But I've been looking at satellite imagery of how much the world has been reforested in the last 30 years compared to what it was 30 years ago. And it's extraordinary. And I get that the climate issues that we're having in the environment is in trouble. And there's also a lot happening that's really wonderful. And I think that's what I feel really hopeful about, is that every time I catastrophize and disasterize, there's always something that contradicts me. I'm fully convinced that we're all gonna have to just, I don't know, have some mass dying situation at some point, because the world is not going to be able to sustain us anymore. And then something comes along that goes, oh, hold on, no, you can question that. you know, you might have a point, but you can also question that because there's so much happening that is not apparent to us. And it can't be. Our media is controlling what we think and see all the time. And so, of course, all the wonderful things that happen in the world don't sell newspapers or websites or whatever. So there's a hell of a lot of stuff that we're just not seeing, good and bad. And I feel like this is a poem that really invites me, as I think a lot of our sources do actually, when you look at them, that really invites me to be open, to question, and to not even then need an answer, but to have the kind of presence and awareness that's open to much more than what my small little thinking mind is able to generate for me in terms of my reality. And this comparison with nature and the beautiful, like, you know, this line, keep tangling and interweaving and taking more in, a thicket and a bramble wilderness to the outside, but to us interconnected with rabbit runs and burrows and lairs. There's just this beautiful metaphor of, oh, it looks like a wilderness and a bramble. Don't want to go near that. But to the people on the inside of that, it's a completely different, or to the entities inside of that, to the beings inside of that, it's a completely different world. And I think that also invites me into this huge inquiry as to what we do to project our own reality onto other people as well. So we make the big leap into, well, if that's a bramble bush to me, it's a bramble bush to everyone else. And it's just not. Like, everybody is standing in their own unique space and set of complex circumstances and relationships and structures and history and upbringing and education, and it's not possible for us to know how anyone else is experiencing a bramble bush. And how do we just keep opening? Like, I feel invited by this poem to keep opening and opening into other people, and including different parts of me too, have a different way of seeing. And there are different parts that can invite me into a wider perception, a deepening of understanding, of feeling, that's way less contracted and fearful and small and narrow than just this perspective.
I think it's one of the things, Lizzie, in hearing you speak, that is clear to me, is that what this poem invites us to do is to give up on two different kinds of stories or interpretations that are so easy for us to live in. So one is, I'm so tiny and so alone, there's nothing I can do, and all there is to despair and give up and hate myself for it. And the other one is the opposite, is, I'm so big and I'm so godlike that I ought to be able to just move the world by my will. And of course, get frustrated or demand that the world be that way, because. And first of all, both of them are really big misunderstandings, and they're a cause of so much suffering because they don't meet the world as it is. And Marge Piercy says this, there's so many brilliant lines in here, but weave real connections, create real nodes, build real houses, not the imaginary ones, not the ones that are caught up in our own grandiose or, you know, tiny deflated little stories. So I was thinking about that whilst you were talking, and it reminded me of the two lines in this poem, that this poem affects me deeply every time, but the two that always sort of meet me in a way that I can feel myself sort of both judder and settle, because they feel so true and so necessary and so touching. They are quite near one another, but in the towards the end of the poem. Live a life you can endure. Make love that is loving. Live as if you liked yourself, and it may happen. And it seems to me that the connection between these two different takes on life that I was talking about, and this is that both of them to make ourselves so tiny that we can't participate in the world, or so big that we demand that we can see always the connection between I did this and you stopped treating me badly, or I did this and I got control over you, whatever it is that they are essentially self-abandoning narratives. And right in the middle of this participate and weave, she's reminding us that we also have to treat ourselves like living things. We have to commit to living a life we can live as far as we possibly can. And we have to love in a way that is loving and not something else, like controlling or self-abandoning or secretly criticizing ourselves. And we have to live as if we were of value, even if we don't always feel it, which is the thing I love about that last line. She doesn't say like yourself. She says live as if you did, because we don't always, it's hard. But we could live this way as if we were worth something. And then this may happen. Oh, and not it will happen. It may happen. Because that's how the world is. We just can't know. So all of that is always really touching to me. It helps me remember how far I can stray. How often, when I read it, how far I have strayed. You know, there I go again. Not remembering this.
Absolutely. I feel, don't know, in my life, I think at some point I cottoned on to appreciating myself. And I feel like that's the goal thing that ever happened in my development, was that even when I mess up and even when I get something wrong, I somehow got the gift of finding my goodness even in my badness, as in finding the good intention even when I did something really not good. But I've never had a situation in myself where I've dug and not found goodness, even when I've got all kinds of ways I could criticize myself, all kinds of ways I can attack myself. There's a way that I think that's the biggest gift I've received from all of the people I've learned from and all of the things I've read and everything, is that there's, and also just, I guess, my own take on life is this living as if I liked myself thing. It's so bashed out of us as children to be, what did they say at school? Oh, she's got a really big head or something was the thing. You know, if anybody thought that they were good at sport or they could do something, it triggered whatever it triggered in people. So everyone was like, you know, kind of attacked each other for the being arrogant or up themselves or whatever. I remember all those sayings. And so I think I spent a lot of years diminishing myself in order to feel like I wasn't being grandiose or something. And I feel like self-appreciation has given me a whole different understanding of what that realm is. And I get that there's a way I could go around being all kind of, you know, self-assured and defended against the world, looking like I was super confident. But it's different than that. It's an appreciation. It's an articulation of goodness, an articulation of good intention. And I think this invitation connects for me, because I think, you know, what she says afterwards, and it may happen, reach out, keep reaching out and keep bringing in. There's a way that if I live inside my own sense of dignity and goodness, it makes it possible to reach out. It makes it possible to keep bringing in. It makes it possible for me to ask for help, because there's a way that if I'm not appreciating myself, I can't then feel that worth you were talking about that's worthy of the help. So if I can cultivate my own inner goodness and my own self-forgiveness, it paves the way to ask for help, because I then realize that there's goodness to be served here, and if I ask for help, that goodness will be served. So I feel like it's got a really big connection to the reaching out and the bringing in. Feels to me like a metaphor for asking for assistance and support, and relying on my goodness helps me, or continually recultivating and articulating my goodness, even when I fall off the bandwagon and attack myself and think I'm an idiot and a bad person and a fraud, and you know, all of, I have all of that going on. But somehow, as I come back to myself and my goodness and my good intention, it helps me to put my network tentacles out and receive the goodness and support from other people that really helps me. And I feel like that's such a beautiful way of speaking about it, because nothing happens in isolation. Like that, this whole poem is saying, you know, if we pick the caterpillars, that's, there's a lot of things involved there. There's a leaf, a caterpillar, and a human being in that little teeny bit. We're not alone. We're not these isolated beings. There's a hell of a lot of interactions going on all the time that we can see sometimes and that we can't. And in this liking oneself, it's way more likely that there's a manifestation that's real of what those connections are and what we might receive from our lives.
I'm so very struck as you're talking about the invitation that I think Marge Piercy might be making here that I hadn't seen until right now in our conversation, which is that she's also reminding us that we are not different from the grapevines and the pole beans and the soil under our feet and the earthworm that blows no trumpet and the creeper that brings down the tree and the rabbit runs and burrows and layers. In other words, I'm so with you that one of the things that we must do is keep on seeing what we can do to find our own sense of unarguable worth, value that comes from being alive, being a living something. What you've been so beautifully calling goodness, we have to keep on finding our way back to. And the one way to do that is to keep on looking inside ourselves. And that is one way to do it, and it's really important. And there's another way to do it, which is to keep on looking around us at how we are like what is around us. So seeing a tall tree and being able to say, I am tall and majestic and graceful as that tree is, finding out what's true about that, or feeling our feet on the solid ground and being able to say, being able to find that inside us that is solid, or seeing how long things take to interweave and unfold, and being able to say to ourselves, I like that. There are parts of me that are mysterious in the depths that weave and take a long time to unfold. And the more we can start to see reflected in us what is in the world, the more chance we have of taking up our place and participating, rather than keeping on finding ourselves separate, like feeling outside of it all the time.
And none of those things that you described are separate entities. They all need the support of water or sunlight or something, and 100 millions of things, like we do. Like we can't be on our own and survive. We can't be deprived of all of this connectedness, and yet we do so much to suffer in silence and keep our stiff upper lip and all that kind of thing. And so I'm so appreciating what you're saying. Like if I could look at a tree and really see it for itself and how well supported it is, I wonder how much I might allow myself to be supported, and what those reaching outs might be of my roots, of my requests, of my body. You know, it just feels such a big invitation.
Yeah. Because exactly the same, I think this seems clear to me in this moment, this morning, that we're not separate from all of that. So it is true to say there is that of me that is deeply rooted. Can I make contact with it? Mm-hmm. No, and there's also that of me that is decaying and breaking down. Mm-hmm. I want to have this be, just a sort of selective, well, I like that. You know, I knowing ourselves as radiant and golden like a sunflower and mucky and mulchy like the mud on which we walk that clings to our boots, they're all ways of recovering our knowing ourselves as present and part of and indistinguishable from the world, which is part of, I think, it's another way into what you were talking about finding our own goodness. And it's also a way into Marge Piercy's invitation to do stuff that's real, to not retreat into some kind of life of the mind where we just keep on ruminating and thinking about things and worrying about everything. No, like I'm here, you know, here, physically here. I'm part of all of this.
Yeah.
And then maybe that's when, I'm wondering, Lizzie, that's when our care gets evoked as well. You know, the sense that because I'm here and because it's all unknowable, but I can take my part, we find ourselves being able to take up our part and to do what we can see to do again and again and again, and not keep on either waiting like many of us do, or, crashing through and ripping everything up in our desperation to get somewhere.
Oh my goodness, it's such a big, lovely conversation. I'm so grateful for this gorgeous. And I probably can get more messages and receipt from it as we went. But I think it is time for us to wrap up. And just to say thank you, Justin, as always, I feel like we have different facets of a diamond to bring. And it feels so rich to receive all of the things that you say and be prompted to feel and think the things I have to bring as well by the things that you say. And it's really, really lovely to do this. And I'm very grateful.
Mm. Me too.
Mm.
So we will look forward to seeing you all next week. Same time. Same place. Thank you for joining us. Thank you, Lizzie.
Thanks, everybody. Bye. Bye-bye.